Hey, welcome to an episode of Crippled by Culture, where we talk about everything in life and relate it to the disability and chronically ill community. My name is Sean Gold, and I am an author, advocate, and nonverbal public speaker for the disability community. To provide a quick visual description for accessibility, I'm a Black man with a white tracheostomy breathing tube in my neck. I'm wearing a gray-blue t-shirt today. Off camera is the voice you hear speaking for me, and this is a video of a Zoom call with me and my guest in the other box next to me. Today, I'd like to thank Yuri Velez for being my voice in this episode. And in this episode, we are talking about the intersections of disability, representation, inclusion, and accessibility in the music industry.
Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for this series, Festability. As a board member, I helped put together a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We had so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage. Getting to do this event was a dream come true. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically. Make sure you come out later this year. More information will be available soon. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
And now let's get to today's amazing guest. Lachi is a blind, multi-award winning artist, Grammys board, DEI ambassador, and founder and president of RAMPD.org. She has dedicated her platform, career, and craft to amplifying disability culture, promoting inclusion, and advocating for accessibility in the music industry. Lachi has also hosted a PBS American Masters segment highlighting disabled renegades and appeared in several national ads promoting accessibility. Named a dedicated foot soldier for disability pride by Forbes, Lachi has held talks with the White House, the UN, and the Kennedy Center, and has been featured in Essence, Billboard, and the New York Times for celebrating intersectionality through art and for her upbeat and unapologetic brand of disability pride. Lachi, what's up? How are you? It's so great to speak with you again. I know we didn't get time to speak during Festability last summer, but we all appreciated your time and incredible performance. Thank you for being here today. Would you mind giving a visual description of yourself, please?
Yeah. So what? That is a ridiculous intro. I better live up to it right now. My name is Lachi, L-A-C-H-I, Lachi like Versace. I am she, her, Black woman, cornrows. I identify as blind. I am wearing a Black off-the-shoulder top with my own logo on it. It's an L with a squiggly bottom, and I'm wearing orange nails that I bought off of Amazon for $4. I'm also wearing some German Kurbuski rings, and I am wearing, I'm not wearing earrings today, girl. Oh my God, can you believe it? I usually have earrings on, and I had just got Swarovski earrings, and look at me not wearing them. So, what else? And then I have like really dope, and my manager just handed me some earrings. So as this conversation goes on, your girl go have some nice earrings on. But you know what? I had a really great time down in St. Louis, and just having a good time, you know, spreading the message, spreading the word, not only through my voice, but through music and sharing that with everybody. And so that was where I first met Sean, and it really popped off and once again gave a ridiculous intro that I hope I lived up to. But you know what? That led into this beautiful relationship, and I'm really excited to be here today. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So this seems like a silly question to ask after your ridiculous intro, but we're going to stick to the script. Do you identify with having a disability or chronic illness? And if so, do you mind sharing kindly what disabilities or chronic illnesses you identify as having?
So I identify as blind. I was born legally blind. And so I identify as blind, the whole lifestyle, top to bottom. I also am ADD, and I manifest that in being super excited and energetic all the time. And yeah, that's basically my two disability identities that I proudly identify with.
Beautiful. How did these disability identities or disabilities affect you in your everyday life?
They show up in different ways. You know, it's interesting. One of the ways that disability really affects folks, in fact, the main way that disability affects folks, is how society views you, how you are socially interacted with, and how there's cultural misconceptions and boxes that you're tossed in. And for the longest time growing up, I didn't necessarily fit the box, right? I, being legally blind, I wasn't the total blind. Shouldn't you have a dog? Shouldn't you have a cane? But because I couldn't see well, people didn't know where to put me. Do I put her in the blind box? Do I put her in the not blind box? And that was how growing up was for a long time. And the way that affected me personally was I didn't know where to put myself. And so I struggled with identity for a long time. And being a daughter of immigrants, being quote unquote raised white, which we will get into later, I had trouble finding identity. And today, one of the things that I really harp on is emphasizing the social aspect and cultural aspect and benefits of having a disability, really stepping into my pride. And so as a blind woman, I love to now celebrate my blindness and my blackness and my womanness everywhere I go. So anything now from painting my canes and having glitter on my canes to match my cute little outfits, really celebrating. For the longest time, I used to wear hair weaves and hair wigs, and I would actually have cornrows under the wig. And so now I celebrate my cornrows by just wearing them out in order to give homage to my blackness and my black hair. And then of course the canes to give homage to my blindness, because I have found that the less confused I am about myself, the less confused society is about me. And I get to dictate my story and my narrative and live in that beauty. And so that's where I'm taking my disability now, but that was definitely a hard journey to eventually get to.
Yeah. Can we talk about that journey a little bit more? How did you come to find your identity as a strong identity as a disabled person? What was that journey like?
You know, it was, there are different steps in a journey. When people ask the question, really at the end of the day, coming to this was a fluid growth, right? It's not like there was a pivot point where I was just like, fuck it, I'm secured of being scared. Like, you know, it came, it was a growth. And a lot of it really started at, so when I was really young, I would watch TV, and I was like I was always very musically talented, and I would write poetry and stuff. And I was like watching TV and listening to the radio, and I thought, I want to do that. I want to be that. I don't even care what. I just want to be famous. I want people to just listen to what I have to say. But because I didn't see role models like myself, my parents didn't see that. My teachers didn't see that. My siblings didn't see it. I didn't have anything to put on my vision board, right? So I took the straight and narrow path. I didn't take the path of being an entertainer, which I am now, because everybody's like, what are you going to be, the first Black blind woman to have a hit? Well, yes, apparently that's what happens. But I didn't know that because I didn't have anyone to look at to follow their footsteps. And so I got that day job, and I was sitting at the desk, and I had no idea what my identity was. And how that manifested was me encountering what I didn't know at the time was ableism. I thought it was sexism. I thought it was racism, which it was, But it turns out that those are just bullet points under the overarching issue of what was ableism, what was external ableism, and what was honestly internalized ableism also, which we're definitely going to talk more about, I know for sure. But it was trying to, I had to first understand what the monster was. Like, I had to understand what I was fighting against. And, you know, one of the big problems that we always talk about with the disability community is the isolation and the silos and all of that. And you don't know that this is what you're dealing with because there's very small community. So I, at some point, got to a point in my day job dealing with the sexism, the racism, the ableism. At one point I go, I'm miserable. Like, may as well be miserable doing what I love, which is music. And, you know, I was trying to live two lives. I was trying to work at this desk, but also like dream to be this entertainer. And I, one incident led to another. And I remember my supervisor at the time asked me if I was getting a big fat attitude with him. And that was the first thing he'd never spoken to me before. And I'd never really spoken either. And I turned in my work and he was like, are you getting an attitude? Basically, I guess, based on my facial expression. So a week later, I quit. And I decided I'm going to walk the path I want to walk. And it was scary. No health care. You know, I was living in Manhattan, no money for rent, but I knew that I wanted to walk this path. And that was the beginning of me starting to find myself. It was music was ultimately what gave me confidence. And as I continued to build my confidence through music, hone my skill, get more and more opportunities, I became more comfortable in saying, you know what, this is who I am. It started out with me accepting myself as a Black person and as a woman, right? I said, you know what? I'm a woman and I deserve to be in these rooms and have my voice heard. And then it was like, I'm a Black person. I'm not going to try to sing like everybody else. I want to celebrate, you know, my culture in the way that I sing. And then it was like, oh shit, we're blind. I also have, oh, y'all gonna have to bleep this stuff out. I'm also blind and I want to celebrate that. There's a lot of voices in the Black movement. There's a lot of voices in the women movement, but there's not a lot of voices in the Black woman with a disability movement here celebrating it through music. And so why am I not, I'm depriving the world of this story, of this life experience. And so that was kind of the growth that I came to. So yeah.
Well, we certainly are going to talk about internalized ableism. In advance of that, what role did Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder as Black blind artists play in your progress and your process?
You know, not as much as people would think, because I don't operate in the genre, right? So I don't actually sing gospel or R&B, or honestly, Ray Charles called himself a country singer, so country. But I am a blind woman, but like I said, I was actually an established artist by the time I came into recognizing my blindness and actually celebrating it and going, you know what, I'm blind too. And so actually the people who influenced me were more Black female artists. So I was heavily influenced by folks like Alicia Keys. Lauryn Hill was definitely one of my heroes. Mm-hmm. I mean, 100%. Mm-hmm. Huge Missy Elliott fan. I just liked, I liked the concept of her. Like, she kind of blended like Blackness and womanness and like a little bit of a queerness vibe. And I was like, I just liked how she, and big girl vibes. I just liked how she was all about it in a time where nobody was saying that. And of course, and again, Lauren, in a time where no one was being like, we had a lot of social conscious rap, but where she was coming from the Black plight, from the woman plight, nobody was doing that. And so I was really inspired by Black women talking about stuff from a Black woman's voice that nobody was talking about at that time. Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of my inspiration came from. I honestly didn't get too into Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder until I started stepping into my blindness and really people coming to me going like, what do you think about Stevie? What do you think about Ray? And I actually had to go and listen to their stuff and be like, oh, okay, this is good stuff. So that is a little confession there. But, but yeah, I didn't have a different take on inspiration as I came into music.
Right. And I feel like disabled people are ignored, obviously, in every community, but especially in the Black community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Disability and mental health are both things that the Black plight struggles with. And I can't be that bad. Like, I understand why. It's hard to be Black. Like, it's hard to be Black already. And so to add on disability, to add on, you know, queerness as well, to add on womanness, any of those things are difficult. Like, you know, like Black women have a hard time, you know, Black queer people have a hard time, Black disabled people have a hard time. It's because being Black is already hard. So we got to try to get people to recognize Blackness before we can even do all these other things. And that's why, you know, there's racism within those communities already. So there's racism within the disability community, Black on white racism. There's racism in the queer community, Black on white racism. So this is one of the reasons why it's so difficult. And what another thing that a lot of folks don't talk about is like, just this whole idea of appropriation, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of folks in the Black community are having trouble being able to get to that next level, because when they do come up with something amazing, it's unseen until someone of a different race showcases it. And yes, it's great that the culture is being celebrated, but the money or the fame or the whatever doesn't actually trickle back down to the Black community. Mm-hmm. So Blackness is already still trying to have its plight and have its heyday, let alone adding on these other facets. And so I think that there is a lot more mental health and disability in the Black community than is even being reported or talked about, because folks are afraid to identify with more than one plight.
Mm-hmm. But we got robbed of the fame and recognition, and we can't help it.
Big Mama Thornton, right? That was one of the biggest obvious ones, right? Big Mama Thornton having her song, you know, blown up by Elvis Presley. And honestly, you know, at any given time, Elvis can go, you know what, I want to do country now. I want to do a different genre now. And, you know, it's not, but Big Mama Thornton can't go, oh, well, now that I'm famous, I want to go do something else. And I don't want to put anybody on blast, because I'm friends with a lot of folks out here, but there are some folks who have dabbled, I'll say, in hip hop music, and they themselves not being from hip hop culture, you know, let's be blunt, you know, just like a white person doing Black music, right? And then they ride the wave and ride the fame, but then they can go off and say, oh, well, now I'm mature. I want to go do a different genre. Oh, I want to start focusing on, you know, I don't know, easy listening or soft rock. The folks who they kind of took the, you know, I don't want to say stole. I mean, you know, a lot of these are collaborative efforts, because, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I spent a lot of time writing for folks that aren't me. As a songwriter that is of Black descent, I kind of got my career up and running songwriting for, you know, these little white girls up here. So it's a collaborative effort, you know, trying to put food on the table. But at the end of the day, those girls can run off and go do something else. Whereas I, or whoever, I don't want to use myself as an example, but like whoever is in the background doesn't have that luxury, because they didn't end up getting that name or that money or that fame to go, okay, well, now that I've made my bank on this, I'm going to go turn around and do something else with my life.
Hmm. It is stolen creativity.
You could call it that, but I think that what it is, it's I recently did a talk at Amazon, and it was really interesting because I sang this song of mine called Black Hawk that I never really have shared with the public before because it's a really intimate song. But really what it is that what Black people have that a lot of other cultures, that a lot of other cultures do have, but we don't actually talk about those cultures. Black people do have a lot of voice to talk about our culture. But one thing Black folks have is we have an unbreakable spirit. We have situations globally where we've been put through the gauntlet and come out with celebrating the fact that we've made it on the other end. We have soul, and soul comes from hardship. Soul comes from an unbroken hardship, and we celebrate that beauty. We celebrate that soul through our music, through our culture, through the way we talk, through the way we act, through the way we live. And that it, and it's so strong and it's so pure. That's what people want. They want that. They're like, I want that soul. I want that narrative. I want that to be my problem. I want to have problems. I want it to seem like I have a plight and an unbreakable spirit. That's what's being taken.
And whatever, we both know whatever we say will reach some people, but the minute they say it, they go viral.
Yes. Now there are some exceptions. There's some Black people out here that are actually making some noise and some wave. But you know, at the end of the day, the folks kind of running things, moving things around, where the money lies, they want to see themselves. They want to see themselves celebrating soul because then they can relate more. And that's a hard truth. And really the only way to kind of start solving some of that stuff is to start getting some of us writing the checks, right? and that's the hard truth. And that's the movement that we're trying to work on. And then we can start talking about the difficulties there. I mean, outside of the community and within the community, crabs in a barrel, things like that. So,
All right. Thanks, Lachie. Let's get to that internalized ableism. How has your journey been, or how is your journey continuing towards accepting your identity as a disabled person in terms of internalized ableism?
Well, it's an interesting journey because, you know, you don't wake up one day and go, I had internalized ableism and now I don't. You will always have to wake up and sharpen the saw, right? Continue to hone your, and continue to grow. And, you know, I think the most beautiful thing that anyone can do is that initial realization. That is always going to be the hardest step because you have to come to it on your own. People can beat you over the head with it. You can go to a million talks. You can this and that, but you have to come to it on your own. That is going to be the hardest part. And then it is the exercise of continually cultivating it. And there are actual, you know, somebody came up to me and was like, how do you do it? Like, if somebody hurts you and you feel really bad and you're depressed, how do you get out of it? Like, how do you literally get out of it? You can't just be like, stop being depressed. How do you get out of it? Lachie, tell me exactly how. And I was like, well, first of all, it's different for everyone, but there are ways that you can physically try to get out of these internal things, like these imposter syndromes, these bouts of depressions. Why should I be here? These, oh, I shouldn't feel proud or whatever. And the ways I do it are one, gratituding. It's so corny. Like it feels corny when you do it the first couple of times, but I guarantee you it is such a beautiful, perfect thing. And it's been proven that psychologically and statistically to help brighten your mood, lift your confidence, and actually honestly help you live longer. It's healthy for the brain. And what gratituding is you can either do it via journal or you can just do it to yourself in a mirror, but you just say what you're thankful for. Say three things that you're thankful for once a week, you know, and just check in with yourself. And be like, you know what, instead of being like, I'm so busy, or, oh, I hate my day job, or, oh my God, my partner has been so annoying. It can be like, you know, I am so busy. I'm doing a lot. My career is doing awesome. Oh my God, I have a job. Like disabled people don't have jobs, or Oh, I'm in love. A lot of people are looking for love. So instead of seeing them as negative things, you can see them as positive things. Also, what it does is it helps you like massage your self, your ego, your body, your brain. I was just talking to a friend earlier today. You know, you never really think about what your legs are doing or what your torso is doing or what your left ear is doing, right? Until it starts hurting. Then all of a sudden, once your ear is hurting, your whole life is about your ear. You're like, my ear hurts. I need to fix this right now. But that's how we are with pain, period. Like, we don't check in with ourselves. We don't think about what's going on in our body and our brain until it hurts. And that's why we're always focusing on negative things. But the truth of the matter is that you should always be checking in. So you don't just wait until a part of you hurts to check in on it. And one way to do that is gratitudes.
Words 100% absolutely have power. As an author and an English major, I know that every damn word has two P's, power and purpose.
That I 100% agree with. You know, words are how we communicate, not only with each other, but with ourselves and with the world. And, you know, words do have power externally and internally. It's, you know, there's this movement right now that I love, anti-fat talk movement. You know, when people look in the mirror and go like, oh, I'm so ugly today. You might be thinking you're just saying like a quick thing, but you are a person telling a person, even though that person is yourself, someone is saying to you, you're ugly today. Why would you ever want to hear that? You know, but if someone told you you were beautiful, intelligent, smart, funny, then you would feel great. And why can't that person be you? Why can't you be that person that says that? So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. Can we talk about what are some pre-assumptions that people have about blindness?
Oh God. So, you know, one of the main things is that people think that you either see or you can't see, that you either see black or you see 20/20. And the truth of the matter is that blindness is a spectrum. Honestly, only less than 15% of blind people actually are totally blind, actually see black. So 85% of blind people can see. And it was so funny. I had written like a tweet or something that was like, even, you know, I can do everything. And somebody responded, well, you're blind, so you can't see. And I wrote back, actually, I'm blind and I can see. So I can still do everything. So it's like a lot of folks don't recognize the spectrum of blindness. I mean, we have people who are high partial, meaning they can see well, but they still fall into legally blind. We have people who are low partial. We have people who are total. We have people who see in their periphery, but not in their central vision. Mm-hmm. People who see in their central vision, but not in their periphery. People mm-hmm. who have light blindness. People who have night blindness. There's so many spectrums. And then another thing is people assume that all blind people must have a cane or a dog. But it turns out that less than 8% of folks use a cane and less than 5% of folks have a dog. So actually, because of society's ableism and people's fear of discrimination, they just out here freeballing it. You know what I'm saying? So most folks who are blind actually are not using any aid whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Another assumption too is like, oh, well, you're blind. Why don't you just get glasses? Okay, well, come on. So it turns out that if folks are considered legally blind, it's because glasses cannot help them, or mm-hmm. else they would have gotten it, my friend. So yeah, so those are some of the assumptions. And you know, I'm glad you brought this up because I've been getting a lot of flack. So one of the things that I do is I'll have my cane and I'll have my cute little outfit, I'll have my heels on, and I'll just walk down the street. And I'll put that on Twitter or TikTok or YouTube. But I guess we're not talking about Twitter no more. I'll put it on YouTube or TikTok. And then it'll blow up or go viral because people are in the comments going, oh, there's no way you're blind. Like, mm-hmm. if you're blind, how were you able to, like, walk down the street like that? If you're blind, how are you able to, like, you don't look blind. And I'm like, this is the stigma that I am trying to break for you, commenter, that the fact that you think that all blind people look and act a certain way is what I'm trying to break.
Mm-hmm. I love those videos, but the comments are ridiculous. I see them and they're out of control.
You know what? I'm not even mad at them. Honestly, it is ignorance. And it depends on where we're at, right? Like on TikTok, honestly, I think a lot of folks on TikTok are trying to learn. YouTube, some YouTubers need to go back home and have a mama, you know, tell them some manners. But honestly, a lot of it honestly is ignorance. And I'm here to be patient and try to teach folks. But there is, you know, there's sometimes there does have to be that level of like, I'm not Mother Teresa. Okay. So sometimes I'm gonna clap back and there is a part of, there is a misperception that folks with disabilities are all saints and we're all out here to inspire. But girl, I'm out here to be a famous musician. So I'm not trying to be Mother Teresa. So you're going to get me clapping back sometimes. But, you know, we are out here to educate.
So speaking of ignorance, how do you feel when sighted people joke about being blind? Is it insensitive or are the jokes not so bad?
It depends. So there's a two-pronged thing here. Like, well, actually it's three prongs. So it's whether you do it verbally or whether you do it in action, right? Mm-hmm. So when people do, so there are sometimes some organizations will have what they call simulations. That's the word. And so they'll have people put on like blindfolds or whatever to try to showcase empathy of blindness. And it's always done pretty poorly. And I always discourage folks to do like the simulation thing of like, let's all pretend we're blind by putting on blindfolds, because you're not actually showcasing the blind experience. You're only showcasing the trauma of just going blind. And then it makes people believe that blindness is all about trauma. And that's not true at all. I have a good life and I get paid. Like, I'm not feeling trauma. And so it's a misnomer. So that's that. And then if we open it up to just like the word blind, which is a big sort of discussion, right? Earlier you said words really matter. They have power, they have purpose, and that's really true. But they also are personal as well. That's another P I'm going to throw out there for you. and so words have a personal effect on people. And the general, like, where do I want to go with this? Some people will say things like blind spot or, you know, oh, I was blind to this, or, you know, you blinded me, you hurt me, and I was blinded by it. And they'll use the term blind to mean ignorant. And a lot of folks in the blind community, especially sort of in the more DEI and advocacy aspect, frown against it. I personally, like Lachi, actually don't really mind it or care. What I do is if my friend cares, then I care that my friend got hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, I will defend someone if they are hurt by it. For me personally, I don't really care. One thing I can't stand is when people go like, you know, good to see you. Oh my God, I said, see, was that offensive? And I'm kind of like, calm down. So, yeah.
Yeah. Disability considered to be entirely trauma in general, and not seeing the beauty that comes with that in our experience as disabled people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that whole thing right there. And I mean, it kind of harkens back to society just not interacting enough with disability and not seeing enough of the stories and the narratives and the beauty that comes with fucking living your entire life problem solving. I mean, that's awesome. Living your entire life outside the box and having every decision you make be a creative decision. That's awesome. And it's a story and a narrative that hasn't been told. Look, we hear the same old stories all the time. I mean, they just slap a different race or a different gender on it or something like that, but we're just seeing the same old stories. What stories are we not seeing? stories about disability culture, intersection mm-hmm. with disability. We're not seeing those stories mm-hmm. and they're new, different, and amazing. Mm-hmm. And because we're not celebrating them in media and culture, this is why we're still having societal issues and, you know, this ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I posted a TikTok on appropriation for Halloween, and I said, you can pay tribute to the blind and disabled celebrities without pretending to be blind or disabled. And a person commented, but how will they know? And on any other day, I would have cussed them out, not gonna lie.
You know, part of the thing too is society has very little faith in itself. You know, so that commenter, it's like, people really aren't like, people can figure things out. Like, how would you know? Would you be that confused? Like, no, you wouldn't be that confused. So it's like, give people grace and give people whatever. Like, it's totally fine. Also, gosh, there was something you just said. I did want to alert people that, like, it's so funny. Speaking of Halloween, the word spooky, S-P-O-O-K-Y, actually comes from spook, which means it's actually like historically a derogatory word for dark-skinned folks. I just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know if it's a thing yet. I don't know if people are just trying to avoid that word or not, but it was told to me when I had said the word spooky, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just, I guess, start saying scary, because honestly the world is scary and we need to put that word out there too. So yeah,
good to know, thank you. So I always ask people to provide image descriptions at the beginning of every episode that I do. Can you please explain why this is important for content creators to start doing? There are misconceptions about the spectrum of being blind. I think many would find it unnecessary to do when it is very necessary.
Image description. Okay, so there's two types of description, visual description. So there's visual description, which is the umbrella, right? Visual description encompasses image description and like self-description, which are two different things. So when we talk about content creation, we're talking about image description. So let's go down that road first, and then we'll talk about self-description. So image description is when you describe what your image looks like, and it's mainly for content. So let's say, for instance, you post a picture of a girl with an umbrella, a girl with a purple umbrella walking down the street, you post it on your Instagram. What it is you saying, under maybe like, hey, a beautiful rainy day, under it you say image description, girl with an umbrella walking down New York City, whatever. And so there's several ways you can do this. You can either put it in the alt text section of your image. The alt text section allows people with screen readers to access that image. So while they're reading through your post, it says, oh, it's a beautiful rainy day. And then they will be able to say, it'll say alt text, girl with purple umbrella. So now they understand what everybody else got to see as well. And you're giving them further access to be able to enjoy the content more, to be able to be on a more equal footing with everybody else ingesting your content. You can also write that description in the actual field of where you write your caption. You can write rainy day, and then you can literally write the words image description. Now, when you do that and you put it in your caption, it also still helps blind people because they're reading your full caption, but it also helps anyone else who possibly needed that. I've been told from some folks in the neurodiverse community and in other communities that they actually benefit from image description written in the caption, because it also helps them figure out what they may or may not have been seeing. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, it actually just celebrates disability culture. It showcases that you care about disability culture, that you care about including blind folks and other folks from the disability community. And lastly, it is rewarded. It's rewarded by Google. It's rewarded by Instagram when you add alt text and when you add these descriptions. And so I've been trying to tell these creators who are like, I just posted something and it had one view. I'm like, you know what? Why don't you consider adding an image description? Because not only will Instagram and TikTok and Twitter or whatever automatically have the algorithm wink at you for it, But then you're also actually including a whole demographic of people that were excluded, which is blind people and others. Mm-hmm. That's image description. Now, let me say self-description really quickly is when you say what you look like, right? At the top of a Zoom meeting or a roundtable meeting. And it was really popularized during these at-home Zoom, you know, post-COVID meetings. And really what it is saying what you look like so that the blind people in community can have access to who's in the room. Mm-hmm. Well, why should I do that? Well, A, it actually helps orient everyone. And I've also been told from the neurodiverse and autistic community that it has been helpful. But secondly, it's a great icebreaker. Well, people say the caveat is, well, it takes too much time and I feel awkward and I'm like spending 35 minutes saying what I look like. You don't have to. Like, I always feel like people are like dying on this hill of trying to describe what they look like. It's like, it's not that serious. I walk in and I go, Lachi, she, her, black woman, cornrows. Do you really need more? Do you need to know like where, like what my entire apartment looks like and like what my kids look like and like what my family tree is? No, it can literally be 2 seconds and you're fine. So that is self-description and image description, which lies under visual description.
So should YouTubers be doing that?
Yeah, I believe YouTube. So yes, I believe YouTubers should definitely be doing that. You can actually add a really brief description in your video description of what like generally is happening in the video. But if we're talking about just like if you're having an interview or if you're just talking about your day or whatever, I encourage it. Now, YouTube is saying that they eventually want to have like audio description, so AD, but they don't have it yet. So until that day comes, the way for folks who are blind to have access to your video will be you giving a self-description. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I want to point out is that I believe it's like anywhere from like 14 to 16 million Americans are blind. That is a significant number. And that I believe it's by either 2040 or 2050, that number will triple. So we're gonna out here like a ninth of the population is gonna be blind. Are you gonna exclude a ninth of the population from your content? If you include a ninth of the population, if you're somebody looking for clicks and views, well, you might as well bring these people in because you no longer be excluding a whole ninth of the population.
Thank you. All right, let's get to your involvement in the disability community and the music industry. When did you realize that you wanted a career in music?
Well, I've always wanted a career in music at a very young age, like I said earlier, but it was, you know, it was kind of stymied by my parents who are Nigerian, right? So I'm an African, West African immigrant born here, but, and so there was like, when you say music, do you mean doctor? And so, you know, there was a lot of that. And I had to really kind of claw my way out and make sure that I stayed true to that. I think it was around like 2015, you know, after I quit my day job at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, I really dove in and said, you know what, I'm going to have to make this a full-time thing if I actually want to become like award-winning, if I actually want to have a national platform. I can't really split my time into one direction and the other. So I did. I started writing. I started hooking up with producers. Again, I ended up getting signed to this amazing management company that specifically worked with dance music. And through that, I ended up working with Styles P, who is like sort of like a legendary in hip hop. And then I worked writing with like Snoop Dogg, did some writing with Marcus Schultz, who's big in EDM and house and trance. And then started getting support from like Armin van Buuren and other big names in the house and trance and dance scenes. And then it just kind of took off from there to the point where I am now. And this is one of the things I kind of tell my mentees is that just because it's creative work, just because it's music doesn't mean it's not a career. And when you're looking at a career, that means getting educated. That means taking lessons. That means networking. That means continuing to hone your craft and knowing what's going on in the industry. Follow the zines, be a part of the clubs or do whatever that you would do in any industry. And so I started doing that. Which landed me, you know, running the Grammys and running my own disability and music organization.
What does music mean to you, especially as someone who's legally blind? Do you use it to express yourself?
Yeah, music has always been one of my tools to be able to find out who I am inside and to engage society outside. It's always been a tool of confidence for me, actually. Because of music, I, you know, was able, the first time I ever really spoke out in high school, where I was like super totally quiet, was at a talent show where I sang a song called Belong, where it was a song that I said, you know, I don't feel like I belong. Do you feel like you belong? We can feel like we don't belong together and do this together, something like that. And then I started making friends that way. When I went to college, I started joining musical groups and started getting positive feedback for being a talented singer. And because I started feeling what it felt like to be confident, my confidence grew. Mm-hmm. Music made me move to New York because I was chasing that, you know, dream and that thought of like, you know, music. I was told that I should move to New York when I was, you know, back in North Carolina. And I did. I went out to New York where I came to this new land of access. Like, I can get around in New York. Now, New York is not the most accessible place for wheelchair users, but it's definitely accessible for blind folks because we can get anywhere with the subway system. Mm-hmm. And then it's very accepting of anyone, no matter how weird or different you are. And then I went to school, and then I eventually got this. As my music, I started getting rewarded more and more for my musical skill, which boosted my confidence. So I've always had a really tight relationship as it pertained to music. And then eventually it was because of music that I embraced my disability. You know what I mean? So it was very full circle. Like, because I was blind and disabled as a young person, I turned to music to be the only outlet. But eventually music had brought me that confidence that it became the way I could outlet my disability. And so it is a very beautiful relationship I have with music.
That is beautiful. You recently conducted a study with NYU assessing accessibility inequities in the recording industry for blind producers and engineers. What were some findings from that?
I am so excited that you're asking me this question. I mean, you know what it is. You know how it is to be writing thesis papers and somebody asks you about it and you're like, yes, I'm going to talk about this for 45 minutes. No, okay. I'll give you like some just overview numbers that honestly, look, you know, a lot of the assumptions you may have about what I'm about to say are what we found, but now we have numbers to back it up, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, firstly, I think a number that sticks with me is this number of 60%. So 60% of the blind folks that were surveyed, I think we surveyed 33 blind and 24 non-blind. And really all we did was we surveyed them about their experience in the music industry, the recording industry. We surveyed them about navigating recording technology. And then we surveyed them about their thoughts of success. What does success mean to you? Do you feel successful? And the majority were actually, you know, practicing people in the music industry. So 60% of the blind folks who were surveyed said that they could not complete a project due to accessibility issues. Now that's a significant number. They couldn't finish their song or they couldn't complete whatever they were doing because they had an accessibility barrier in their technology. And then 57.6% said they experienced discrimination on a gig. So mm-hmm. whether it be in the studio, whether it be out playing as a sessionist or whatever, they experienced discrimination on a gig. These are significant numbers. Other little things that we found was that while finances were, we asked things like, you know, household income, income from music, the income bracket or the income disparity is large, right? The income of folks who are non-blind are much higher than the income of folks who are blind. Mm. However, the gear and the equipment that you need to buy is more expensive mm-hmm. for blind folks because of accessibility and because of all of that kind of stuff. So it's expensive to be disabled out here, okay? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we're making less money. And I think one of the last interesting things that I'll share is that You know, most blind folks said that they primarily navigate with a keyboard, whereas most non-blind folks primarily navigate with a mouse. And then when we talk about really basic tasks on recording equipment, like let's say, for instance, play and stop, record and not record, mute and unmute, those were actually easier for blind people to do than non-blind. So I thought it was just going to be more difficult for blind people to do everything across the board. But it turns out it's actually easier for blind people to do basic tasks. And I, now my personal conclusion is it's because those tasks are keyboard tasks. They have very easy keyboard shortcuts. So blind people, hey, give us keyboard shit and we gonna kill y'all with that. So I think that these are things we're going to lean into. We're really excited about this paper. We got to talk to folks from Google. We got to talk to folks from Native Instruments. We spoke to professors over at Berkeley. And so there's a lot of people that are really interested in this study that are a part of it. And so we're really excited to publish it. And it's we're hopefully going to get it peer reviewed over at the Audio Engineering Society. Fingers crossed.
That is dope. And ain't that some bullshit, though? We are restricted from making money as disabled people. Mm-hmm. So people charge way more for accessibility. That's called systemic oppression.
That is systemic oppression with a capital S and a capital O. Like, and it's like, it's so, it, the solutions are just so simple. You just have to care. You just have to want to do it. Be intentional and think about it from a universal design perspective.
And listen. Mm-hmm. Listen to disabled folks.
You know, how many rooms have I been in that of people who make decisions for the disabled community or the accessibility contingent? Mm-hmm. No one has a disability. Mm-hmm. Just consistently. And it's like, it's not like we don't have folks that are professionals and can answer these questions. Mm-hmm. We do in our community. They are just, it's hard and few and far in between to get them to be in those rooms. Mm-hmm. And that's a shame because you're not going to.
Just because of systemic ableism, I think.
It's because of systemic ableism. You know, people keep going, well, where do I find one? Google. What? Whenever you're looking for something, Google it. Like, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And one thing too that I found just as an entertainer and a performer and whatever, and I'm not trying to call nobody out, but this has happened to me recently, like on like two occasions where they'll hire me to play a role, you know, or whatever. And then I'll go, who is the accessibility coordinator? Like, who do I talk to about that? And they'll go like, oh, you know, well, can you help us with that? Mm-hmm. You know, can you tell us about your experience? And the answer is just no. Like, I'm not even going to explain anymore because I'm like, you hired me to be an actress. You hired me to be a singer. That is my job here. Mm-hmm. I am not also like a union rep. I'm not like, you know what I'm saying? You hired me to be an actress. I can't go to myself and complain about accessibility. I need somebody to be able to do this. And there are people who are trained as consultants, and mm-hmm. you need to pay them to do their work.
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. It's so important that we are not relied upon to be the educators about disability, about accessibility. When we're experiencing it ourselves, and what we need is that support.
Yep, 100% agree. Like, I couldn't even agree more. And just, God, it's just, you know, it just gets like, okay.
Yeah.
Get a little tired. Not every moment is a teaching moment. I'm just trying to walk down the street.
Thank you. Thank you. Every school I went to, I was the first of something. And it's tiring.
Yeah. It's like, you know, okay. So you have no idea, like, well, you do have an idea how true that rings to me. I mean, it just starts getting like, it's 2022. Why am I still being the first of all, It's been 2022 years since Jesus and 4 billion years before that. You telling me I'm still...
Oh my God.
Y'all get with the program, you know? And I mean, look, it's a beautiful thing to be able to have this, like, you know, platform to educate or to be that pioneer, but everyone in the disability is just consistently a pioneer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when can we get to a point where we get to start celebrating nuances, mm-hmm. and not constantly always being like the big first, da 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 da. Like, let's start getting to a point where this is regular conversation. Mm-hmm. And the only way that, again, I mean, honestly, the only way that's going to happen is when we start seeing this more in mainstream discussion, infiltrating pop culture, seeing this seeing disabled people in executive positions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's when we start to like have it, this trickle down effect of, oh, you know, I think a great example is like Modern Family. When everybody started watching that show and going like, oh, well, there's just like a gay family with a daughter and everybody's just fine. Why can't we just see more of that? Not every mm-hmm. disabled person. You know what I like to say, Sean? I like to say, look, I'm cute enough to be a porn star, but I ain't trying to be an inspiration porn star. Okay. Just because I got out of bed and walked down the street doesn't mean I am this big superhero. I'm a superhero because I won awards. I'm a superhero because I'm a superhero because I'm just dope, not because I'm blind and was able to get out the house. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
people need to know how to only acknowledge the disability and not make it our entire personality. That's why I refuse to write a memoir.
I hear that because identity consists of all parts of yourself. Like, just because you're disabled doesn't mean you have to be like, I'm disabled, period. Disability can just be part of your identity, just like Blackness, you know, queerness, whatever are the different parts of your puzzle piece. It all makes you up, and you have every freedom to identify with all of them. Mm-hmm. And like, you can find community in each aspect. I think one of the problems a lot of folks are having, in especially in the disability community, is they're like, you know, I don't want you to see the disability. I want you to just see me. And then on the going like, I'm disabled and that's my thing. And it's like, we're all just human. Like, we're living the human experience. And in that like fluid human experience, disability will come and go. Like, at one point you were a baby, now you're a child, and then you're a teenager and you're an adult. And then sometimes at one point you'll be non-blind and then you will be blind. And at one point you'll be, you know, deaf or like in a wheelchair or not. Some of this shit's temporary. And sometimes you can just fold in and out of it. Like, it's all just like the fluidity of life, which is totally fine. But one thing I will say is that you're going to have one of two outcomes. You either going to end up disabled or you're going to end up dead. So you're like, you're going to eventually join the group. So you may as well make a world that is going to be dope for when you get here. Like, oh, I love saying that.
Okay, guys, here's the thing. Lachi's interview went on for nearly 2 hours, so it's too long to put in one episode. But that is why she is the series' first two-part episode. Please stay tuned for the rest of this conversation, as it is so important. All of her links will be in the description section of both parts. Until then, thank you for watching and listening. Make sure you like, comment all your thoughts, and subscribe. I'll see you all next time on the second half of this episode of Crippled by Culture.